This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mallard.
Good morning. Happy Sunday to you. I hope you're having a fantastic weekend. I don't know if you can be having as good a weekend as the White Sox are having after having taken the series from the Minnesota Twins, taking the first two games with an attempt to sweep them this afternoon. First pitch coming your way at 1:10 today here on the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. And let's add on the fact that the Cleveland Guardians have also lost their first two games of the weekend. And so the White Sox are feeling good right now as they are 72-63 on top of the American League Central, with the Guardians now at 68-68 at 500, 4.5 games back here on August 30th. And oh yeah, by the way, the Houston Astros, who are leading the American League West, they are the next opponent on the docket for the White Sox. They are also 68-68, and you may be saying, why do I care what the record of the Houston Astros is? They're not in the White Sox division. No, but since they are leading the AL West, they are also a competitor that we're keeping an eye on these days, because I will continue to talk about this. I think it is paramount after the season that the White Sox have put together right now. They are in position to do good things. And if you want to do good things, your chances improve dramatically if you can secure a first round bye, which the number two seed does. The White Sox are currently in the number two seed in the American League playoffs. Don't worry about the AL East. They can beat up on each other. We're not going to worry about them. They'll take care of themselves. They could potentially be the opponents that the White Sox are showing off against in the ALCS if they can secure a bye, set themselves up with home field advantage in the American League divisional round, set their rotation while their opponent is bludgeoning whoever they're getting through to face the White Sox in the ALDS. What a fantastic way to wake up right before the calendar turns to September. How can you not just love it? Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller, 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard and talk some White Sox with me. We'll take your calls as we always do. And this is essentially just an extended pregame for you to talk some Sox as we get set for the series finale. White Sox will go for the sweep today. They will open with Jordan Hicks. I would imagine we will see Jose Urquidy again in a bulk role. He wasn't great the last time out, but the time before that, obviously, he was excellent against the Cubs when he gave the White Sox six very strong innings. So let's hope we get that Jose Urquidy today. But Jordan Hicks starts the game as the opener for the Sox, and Zebby Matthews will start for the Twins. Let's take a quick call, and then we'll recap you if you missed it yesterday. Let's kick things off with Joe, who's in Mount Greenwood. What's going on, Joe? Good morning, my friends.
Hey, good morning. I love the Sox season so far. This has been great. But I'm worried about the pitching down the stretch. What do you think?
I am worried, too. I'm not going to lie, Joe. That's something that has been a concern. The White Sox still have the second fewest number of innings in baseball from their starting rotation. I will say, part of it is because they have truly embraced the opener, and that's always going to give them some, you know, shorter starts, at least when it goes down in the books. But nevertheless, I think it's fair to be concerned about it, because Sean Burke, the one ace that the White Sox felt like they could rely upon over, let's call it, 2.5 months. Well, the last three times out, he has certainly struggled. It looks like fatigue may be setting in a little bit for him. That's the biggest concern, Joe. But I'm also, with each passing day, coming to grips with the fact that I think the White Sox, I don't know if this is the best way to phrase it, but it feels like in some ways they might be on the cutting edge of future pitching staff usage. You know, this is something, the way Will Venable has attacked each and every game this year, for the most part, is the way managers have been attacking each and every postseason game for the last 7 or 8 years, where they're not afraid to give a starting pitcher the quick hook after, especially after they've seen the lineup two times. They're not messing around in the playoffs. And maybe it is just a product of necessity for Will Venable, because he maybe doesn't have the starting pitching that other teams have to tap into. You know, Eric Fetty, who was really good yesterday yet again, you know, it's one of those things where if you can't rely on your starters to go deep in the game, you have to find other alternatives and ways to win. And certainly you'd wonder if the bullpen will be able to continue to do this throughout the season. But Grant Taylor, he obviously is the one arm in this line, in this pen, that is the most trusted. He came up as a starter. He wants to be a starter in this league. So they can, you know, he's somebody who's going to be able to give you more innings than your typical reliever. Jordan Hicks, who's opening today, he has been a starter in this league in the past. So theoretically, he could probably carry some more innings than you might be used to. Sean Newcomb has a history as a starter in this league, even though he's been predominantly a reliever. We've seen he's been the most valuable pitcher for the White Sox all season long. So I think they've accumulated some arms here that you can say, hey, these are 2-3-inning types. Hey, Hagen Smith, if he can start to get a little bit more consistent, he might be somebody who Will Venable starts using in longer 2, maybe 3-inning stints, if he can show that he can go back out there after that first inning and maybe continue to be a little bit more consistent. So the White Sox have assembled arms that are not your typical one inning relievers. And so it's not maybe the traditional route we're used to seeing, Joe, but maybe, just maybe, the White Sox are finding a different way to win baseball games in 2026. And at this point, how can you argue with the results? Let's recap what happened yesterday if you missed it. Andrew Benintendi, who returned from the bereavement list on Friday with a couple of RBIs, added another one early. The man loves hitting at Target Field.
Swing and a line drive, base hit to right. Antonacci will score, and it's 1-0.
Well, keep complimenting Benintendi on his clutch hitting, because he apparently is listening to you.
The Twins would come right back. Josh Bell, a sac fly to tie it up. Walker Jenkins, the top prospect in the Twins organization, who made his big league debut on Friday, the 12th overall prospect in all of baseball. He made his debut because Byron Buxton is dealing with a hip injury that has cost him at least the first two games of this series. And so he's listed as day-to-day, and I did just pull it up. Let me confirm, because I was just looking at the... Yes, and he's not in the starting lineup today for the Twins, so I'm not sure if he'll be available off the bench, but Walker Jenkins drove in his first big league run.
Jenkins hits a ground ball to Mydrop. They're going to get an out at second, and the relay's going to be late. It is an RBI fielder's choice for Walker Jenkins' first career run driven in, and he gives the Twins a 2-1 lead.
But it would be short-lived, as in the top of the fourth, Andrew Benintendi, again, I told you, he loves hitting at Target Field, and thank goodness he does, because he actually picked up the only 3 hits for the White Sox yesterday in the entire game. He came around to score in the top of the fourth when Kalen Culpepper, Dante's son, couldn't make the play.
He's there with two gone, the 1-1. Mydroth hits a rollover bouncer. Bobbled by the shortstop. It's an error on Culpepper. Benintendi scores, and we're tied at 2. That was as routine as it gets.
So it was nice to see the White Sox get the tie there. Eric Fetty, kudos to him, man, because he finally gave the White Sox a start for the first time since August 21st, where the White Sox had a starter go 5 innings. That's insane. And for Eric Fetty to be the guy, of all people, to break the streak was also somewhat surprising. He gets through 5 yesterday, tied up at 2. And then in the top of the 6th, Andrew Benintendi rewarded Fetty for going that deep into the game.
That sets up a 1-2. And a swing and a fly ball again. Well hit out into deep right, and it's gone. Benintendi, 3-for-3. And his 4th go-ahead RBI in the series.
3-2. So short, so quick, and so ready for that 98-mile-an-hour fastball. Talk about making the adjustment. He's done it, and he made the young man pay.
That gave the White Sox a 3-2 lead at the time. I said he rewarded Fetty because at that point it certainly looked like he was done. And indeed, he was after those five innings, two earned runs, four strikeouts for the Sox with a 3-2 lead. Will Venable turned to, as I mentioned at the outset, the MVP, most valuable pitcher on the Sox staff, Sean Newcomb. Where would the White Sox be without him? And guess what? Just when you think, really, is Sean Newcomb going to give the White Sox another multi-inning stint? Oh, yeah. At this point, it feels like that is the norm. And it wasn't just a multi-inning stint. It was three. Three shutout innings from Sean Newcomb yet again. Three strikeouts. He lowered his ERA to 2.19 on the season. And Kurt, thanks to Jake Rogers, big challenge by him, big ABS challenge in the bottom of the sixth.
Sinker just missed the low outside corner, and Rogers is going to challenge it. Very, very close pitch. It's either a strikeout or a walk. And it's a strikeout. Great challenge by Jake Rogers.
So that got the White Sox through the sixth. Sean Newcomb would go the seventh and eighth scoreless. And then that set things up for Brian Hudson, who picked up a save on Friday night, his sixth of the season. And the lefty shut down the Twins for back-to-back saves in Minneapolis.
Long hold. 0-2, hit on the ground to first. This should do it. Mooney's got it. He takes it to the bag, and the Sox win their fourth in a row. And Brian Hudson worked the night like he's got an early bird reservation.
Yeah, it was nice to have a fairly efficient game from the White Sox pitching staff. That has been a big struggle. 2 hours, 35 minutes, and the White Sox beat the Twins 3-2. Andrew Benintendi, all three hits for the White Sox after the game on the field with Connor McKnight, courtesy of CHSN.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, division games always matter. You know, pitching did a great job today. Fetty, Newcomb, and Huddy there to close it out. So looking for a sweep tomorrow.
Four go-ahead hits for you in the series already, and like you say, you still got a game to play. What's going on here?
I don't know. Just trying to go up there and hit the ball hard and get a good pitch, and whatever happens, happens.
So the homer, though, I don't know that you could say it was a good pitch to hit necessarily. It was like off the dirt. What are you looking for in that at bat? How do you get the barrel to that?
Close your eyes and swing hard just in case. I mean, that guy's got really good stuff. He's throwing really hard. Just looking for something that I could, at that point with two strikes, just put in play and was fortunate enough to lift it out here.
You mentioned the bullpen. You had great efforts from guys like Grant Taylor yesterday, and it continues again today with Newcomb. Fetty with a great start. You guys have mixed and matched all the way through. As an offense, what is it like to know that you can trust just about anybody on the mound right now?
No, it's huge. You know, it seems like as an offense, you know, we're pretty streaky, and we can put up a lot of runs, and then to win games like this where, you know, it's kind of the closer, lower scoring, it's massive. So you got to be able to win all the different kind of ways.
Obviously, Andrew Benintendi, a longtime vet, over 10 years of service time in the majors. He knows if they're going to be successful, the Sox need to find different ways to win through the course of a 162-game season, and they have been up to the task 72 times this year, and that is 72 to the positive, only 63 to the negative, as the White Sox are a season high 9 games over 500. Will Venable after the game last night.
I mean, he's been amazing. Obviously, he likes to hit at target field, and it was fitting that, you know, on a day where we were talking about Benny a lot pregame, that he had that kind of day today. Pretty sure he had all three of our hits, a couple RBIs there, so great stuff, you know, from Benny.
He said the secret to that homer was swing hard and close your eyes. Hope you hit it. It's got to be right.
Yeah, you know, he knows what he's doing up there, and he has a plan, and he executes. I think that's what you get with a really good hitter, but also a guy that has experience. He understands what the pitcher on the mound is trying to do to him, and he has a solution for it. So, you know, Benny coming through again, and, you know, he's got trust, and it's nice to see.
What's good at you about Eric's outing today?
Yep. You know, kept us in the ball game. Thought he just had a really good mix of stuff. You know, worked through some traffic there, and just kind of, you know, what we've seen from Fetty really all along. You know, understanding of how to attack guys. You know, if something doesn't work, he's able to get to some other pitches. So, really nice job.
First time in a week that you've had a starter cover 5 innings. How important is that for you?
huge, you know, and you see what can happen when we have the relievers that we have, and you can bridge, you know, one guy like today to the end, which is amazing. So really nice to get the 5 innings of coverage and then quality from Fetty, and then amazing job by Nuke covering 3 innings there. It's big time stuff.
Obviously, wins are not a stat that are emphasized nearly as much for the starting pitcher as they once were because of their usage. But nice to see Eric Fetty pick up his 7th win of the season with that outing yesterday. He talked about his performance and the White Sox getting the win and securing the series against the Minnesota Twins.
Yeah, I think we just started getting a little better pitch mix there later on. You know, me and Raj got on the same page and just kind of started mixing a little better, and I think kept the guys off balance and did a little better there in the last 3 innings.
So finding 95, the fastball kind of roped into that whole idea. You got that a couple of times. And
that's great. Yeah, I've been feeling good. Velo's been good. I think I'm a big believer in fastball. Velo helps, you know, the other off-speed pitches, so definitely a good thing.
What was it like just kind of going back through the starters routine? What's this sort of last month been like when you've been sort of doing a little bit of everything for the team?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously been a kind of a crazy month for me, a lot of ups and downs, getting pen starting, but yeah, I mean, starting is for sure where I'm most comfortable, done it the most in my career, and yeah, you know, just try and put good outings together and give us chances to win when I get the ball. And, yeah, the boys came through today. I mean, he's been great. Obviously, one of the leaders, our veteran. Guy kills it at Target Field. We all know it. I think the Twins probably know it, too. But it's fun to watch. And, yeah, he was great today.
Eric Fetty talking about another strong performance by Sean Newcomb and the entire White Sox bullpen, which has really helped them out here. And I mentioned the record at the outset for the White Sox. They are 4.5 games up right now on the Cleveland Guardians for first place in the American League Central. It is August 30th, and with the White Sox in this position, you know what that means?
There's a magic number.
Oh, we've got magic number watch. That's right, folks. The White Sox. Any combination of White Sox wins and Guardians losses will clinch the American League Central. And right now, that number stands at 23 as we enter play today. White Sox magic number 23.
That's a magic number.
How good does that feel, White Sox fans? August 30th, and I'm busting out the magic number watch for you. What a season it has been. 312-332-3776. That's the number if you want to jump aboard and join me. Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2027 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups opening day on April 1st and exciting new promotions. Plus, enjoy a flexible payment plan, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2027. If you think the season has been excellent, how about the week that Tristan Peters has had? We'll cover that when we come back. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
You're really living up to the nickname Banana Bonds. Are you embracing that now that you're really tapping into your power?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the banana part, obviously, I swung a banana bat the other day. I'm proud of that. And so, yeah, I'm going to embrace it.
And a pitch to Tristan Peters. And he hits it in the air out in the deep right field. And it is a home run. It hit the glove of Benj. And he banged into the wall. And the momentum took the ball into the bullpen.
Well, that's useful. That was perfect. What an effort, though, by Benjamin Wright. He went straight back and hard, reached up, and had the ball until he collided with the fence, and the ball came trickling out of his glove and over the top of the fence for the home run.
3-1 home. Swing and a fly ball, center field, it's deep. Back on it is Ewing. It is gone! The ball game is over! Tristan Peters! With the latest walk-off homer. to Peters. She's hit high in the air to right. Nemo at the fence. We'll watch it go. 3 days, three homers for Peters. A two-run shot, and it's 3-2 in the second. 1-0 is crunched in the air deep to right. It is gone. He's got a four-game home run streak. Wow. 11-7.
When you are hot, why would you ever think about doing anything but trying to hit the ball over the fence? And he has that swing working, and he's having a perfect night.
Let me hear you say the A is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. This is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Again, this is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. This is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Today's Twitter poll, Miguel Vargas said there would need to be a meeting to decide if Tristan Peters would be allowed in the, quote, big bat club. I'm a team. Mune, Colson, Miguel. The question is, after homering in four straight games, should Tristan Peters be let in the Big Bat Club?
No. I'm a big Peters fan, but I know he's not quite at that level, in my opinion.
Haters, 56% say yes, he should be. 44% say not yet.
And that means Chase has to be in it because he has one more home run.
Right. I think you've got to be a 25-plus guy and maybe even multiple seasons before you get into it.
The big bat,
boy club.
Yeah, the big bat club. Tristan has done special things when it comes to the home runs. And in four straight games, for me, yeah, he's the big bat guy for four straight games. But
he's got 11 on the year, which is awesome. Peters is not a home run hitter. He will hit home run.
Yeah, and Chase is the same way, right? He has home run pop, but he's not a home run hitter.
Here is the big bopper, Tristan Peters.
The 0-1.
Hit in the air, out into right. It's way back there. It is gone. He's tied the club record. He has homered in five straight games. Tristan Peters makes it 6-2.
He's in the big boy club now. I don't care.
Incredible.
Put him on the list, boys. Vargy, yes, let him in.
He's making his case, Tristan Peters. That's right. Five consecutive games with a home run. The rookie all-star for the White Sox, Tristan Peters, is, get this. Now, he tied the White Sox franchise record for most consecutive games with a home run at five. He also now is the only, yes, that's right, the one and only Major League Baseball player in the same season to hit for the cycle, a grand slam, a walk-off home run, homer in five straight games, record six RBIs, and reach base safely five times in a game in one season. I mean, every time you think we can't climb any higher on the Tristan Peters mountain of success, we find out there is another apex to go. It's been incredible. What a run for Tristan Peters. What a week. And more importantly, obviously the streak brought a lot of attention to Tristan Peters, the former Savannah Banana. I should note they weren't the bananas that they are right now, although at the end of his tenure with the Savannah Bananas, they were embracing the entertainment factor. There's actually a video of Tristan Peters doing a line dance with his banana teammates to Hit Me Baby One More Time by Britney Spears that is circulating the internet right now. So he definitely got in some of the hijinks. But yeah, what a run. And he has proven that he is a major league caliber player. And more than that, an all-star this season. And now one of few members of White Sox history to homer in five straight games. It's happened nine other times in franchise history. Hey, Sox fans, join us at the ballpark Friday, September 4th, as the White Sox take on the Twins at 6:40. 20,000 fans in attendance will receive an exclusive White Sox magic wand. More on that in a moment. Don't miss your chance to bring a little extra magic to Rate Field. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. Of course, that was inspired by Mike Vassell and his magic wand. We had a conversation with Mike last week. If you missed it, I'm going to bring that back for you so you can hear it, as that is happening later this week at Rate Field. Before we take a quick timeout, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Sports radio station.
Jeff Meller back on White Sox Weekly. When we return, we'll let you hear from the magic man, the wizard himself, Mike Vassell. He joined me. We'll bring that conversation to you when we come back. This is the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, weekday morning, 6 to 9, ESPN Chicago.
Jeff Meller back here on White Sox Weekly. White Sox and Twins series finale coming your way today. First pitch at 1:10. Sox go for the sweep, as they have already taken the series, winning the first two on Friday and Saturday, winning 3-2 yesterday. And White Sox now have a 4.5 game lead over the Cleveland Guardians for first place in the American League Central. The Houston Astros, who are also trying to run down the White Sox, are that very same 68-68, and that matters because the number two seed in each league will have a bye for the wild card round. So now it is not just about making the playoffs. It is about setting yourself up in a position where you can go as deep as possible in the playoffs. And of course, a bye would certainly aid in that. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for City Connect Fridays. Catch the team in the iconic uniforms every Friday night and shop the full collection at the team store. For more info, head to whitesox.com/city. And this Friday night, the 4th, September 4th, is a City Connect Friday. And it is also going to be the Magic Wand giveaway inspired by Mike Vassell. Mike Vassell is an instrumental piece inside the White Sox clubhouse. He keeps the vibes free and easy, loose, and in spring training, when we found out that Mike Vassell was going to have Tommy John surgery to repair the ulnar collateral ligament in his elbow, it was a blow because everybody inside the White Sox clubhouse loves Mike Vassell because of his personality, because he does make it fun to go to the ballpark each and every day. And so it was not just that the White Sox were losing a rookie last year who gave them 100 innings and was a Swiss Army knife for Will Venable in his bullpen, but it was also the fact that they were losing a true leader inside the clubhouse. Although we quickly learned that the several members of the White Sox team asked Will Venable if it would be all right if Vassell would still be in the clubhouse around the team all year as he worked on rehab, if he was open to it. Obviously, Mike was more than welcome to it. He loves being a member of this team. As you see inside the dugout when the White Sox are rallying, he is usually one of the first faces that a CHS and camera will pan to because he is bringing the emotion. And so he's been instrumental inside that clubhouse, keeping the vibes great. I had an opportunity to chat with him last week. If you missed it, great conversation. And because we are leading into the Magic Wand giveaway this Friday, September 4th, figured I'd run it back in case you missed it. And I started out by asking Mike Vassell first and foremost, how is rehab going?
Good. You know, rehab's going great. I just started a throwing type of a deal. I'm throwing off a knee right now, which still not the real thing, but I am throwing, you know, weighted balls into a wall. So that's been going well and progressed to eventually at the end of the season here, you'll see me out on the field throwing a baseball, which will be very exciting. But yeah, I mean, rehab's going great. It is what it is. It's not easy. It's not exactly fun either. We went over my throwing program for the off season, which is going to be, it's going to be long. But yeah, you know, every day I show up, everyone's so supportive. Everyone's in a great mood, you know, helps me. Obviously I'd be love to be, you know, helping the team right now out on the field. But yeah, you know, rehab's going great.
Well, and I'm glad you brought this up, Mike, because this is something I thought about last year. I remember you made your big league debut, and you know, I remember we actually had you on. I believe it was the day after, and just to ask you, pick your brain, and what a whirlwind it was for you to just, you know, step into the White Sox clubhouse, and then all of a sudden, hey, you're a member of the team, and you're making your big league debut, and that was crazy. But now you're in a spot where, after last year, your rookie year, you had a phenomenal year. You went 101 innings. You were actually fifth on the roster in terms of innings pitched. And I was thinking about you a couple times this season, because what's interesting with this White Sox team, Mike, and you can talk to it better than I can, is that in 2026, your team has the second fewest innings pitched by starting pitchers. But that's not a knock. In some ways, it's wild, because it feels like modern baseball now, where you came up as a starter, you're a guy who knows what it's like to be on a routine, but then last year you embraced the role and you throw so many innings for this team, and this year we're seeing a lot of that again. I'm wondering, do you think this is kind of like more of a modern baseball thing, where it's not always going to be, hey, five starters looking to go 7 or 8 plus innings, but maybe more like, hey, an entire pitching staff full of guys who understand that that's not what baseball is, at least at the major league level anymore?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look around the league, it's not necessarily like just the long reliever. It's like they're almost like chameleons in the bullpen. These guys can throw, you know, three. They can go out, get a save, a hold, a spot start. I think that role is definitely becoming more popular. You know, you've seen Sean Newcomb this year. He goes out, he might start a game, throw two. And at the same time, when he comes in back half of the game with the lead, like we're feeling great about him being in there as well, you know. So he's kind of doing everything. You've seen Grant kind of do a number of different roles, even though, you know, he is our closer. I think it's becoming a more popular role. And I also think, you know, the other thing for pitchers in general is it really helps us being able to, you know, if you are one of those guys, it really helps you with your career in general, because you show teams you're able to start, close, you know, throw three. It's just, I honestly embraced the role and I loved it because it was fun. You know, I got to start some games, I got a few saves, and I threw in every type of situation possible.
No doubt about it. Mike Vassell joining me here on White Sox Weekly. What's also fun is the personality you bring inside the clubhouse. I think it's just a testament to how much the guys, how good they feel about having you in your presence. You do keep it light, but also positive, Mike, and that's part of the reason why I know numerous teammates wanted you with the team this year as you were rehabbing it. And of course, eventually the wand made an appearance. Now, I know the backstory with Jordan, but for those who are unfamiliar with it, can you just give us a retelling of how the wand was finally brought about inside the dugout?
Yeah, so, you know, telling stories in the locker room, and we're all joking around, and Jordan Leisher ended up getting me the wand. Now, once I had the wand, it was that game against the Angels. We're at home, and, you know, we'd started to play better, and I believe that day we were going for the sweep. And I thought to myself, you know what, I'm just going to bring in the dugout. You know, why not? We're a bunch of fun guys anyway. Let's bring in the dugout. I bring in the dugout, we hit a walk-off. And then all of a sudden we go on a 5-game winning streak. And then ever since then, I did not think in a million years was it going to catch on, to the point now when I walk out in the dugout, I see people dressed as wizards. I was actually at lunch with my parents earlier today, and I walk out, somebody, you know, ends up saying, "Oh my God, it's a wizard." I don't know if people know me more as just the wizard and don't know my name's Mike, or just as Mike, but, you know, I love it. It brings some positive energy to the team. The guys, like, you know, making fun of me, calling me the wizard, do something, score some runs. It's all fun. But, you know, in all honesty, coming into the year, my goal was to be able to keep the locker room as loose and light as possible, because, you know, 162 isn't easy. So it's all been fun.
No, there's no doubt about it. And listen, you have succeeded in helping to keep the atmosphere light. And yeah, we know right now we're in the dog days of a baseball season. And so I do think you have brought a lot to this team, even though you haven't been able to contribute on the field so far this year. It's funny, though, you mentioned it. I love it because take this in the best possible way, Mike. The wand, it is ridiculously stupid, but it's like what makes baseball awesome, too, is that something like that can catch on, and then all of a sudden, you know, your fan base is like embracing it and loving it. And to your point, you know, showing up as a wizard. I know, obviously, the Harry Potter night went off well because you already had that in the mix. But now talk to me a little bit, too, about the wand giveaway, which is coming up here on another Friday night, sure enough, September 4th, and they're going to be giving out 20,000 wands. We saw the White Sox release when they broke the news to you, they kind of, pranked you with Chris Getz and Justin Jerschle and Will Venable. Talk to me a little bit about what that was like, and when you just think back and go, I can't believe my giveaway is a wand.
Yeah, so... You know, so the day that Will, he had asked me, said, you know, he finds me in the locker room. Pretty sure it was a Monday that they did it. And he goes, hey, you know, Vass, you know, come with me. And I'm thinking in my head right away, like, I legitimately was like, uh-oh. Like, what did I do now? Like, did I cross the line? What happened? So I asked him on the way in. I said, hey, am I in trouble? And he goes, they got something for you. So I sit down and I see Getzy, I see Jin Wong, and I didn't know Jersh was in there. And, you know, we start talking. So now I know I'm not in trouble when they say, you know, do the whole bit. But then when I see Jersh come out with the wand in the box, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome. And, you know, I talked to Miguel Vargas. Vargy was telling me, he's like, bro, you were so good last year, and you didn't even get a bobblehead this year, nothing. He goes, now you're on the IL, and you've got a wand giveaway. He goes, how awesome is that? I go, Vargy, this year, nothing surprises me anymore. You know, nothing does. And then now with the wand giveaway that night, 20,000, it's going to – I don't, you know, say this is going to happen for sure, but another Friday night at the rate, wand giveaway night – who knows what's going to happen that night?
No.
Who knows? It's probably going to be something crazy. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Speak it into existence like the wizard that you are, Mike Vassell.
That's right.
I also love the Southside Magic shirt, the Roto-Wear shirt that has the cartoon character of you with the wand. You have to tell me. Please tell me you have at least two of these shirts, because I feel like I see you wearing it every single day in the clubhouse.
So I, in fact, do not have two shirts. I wear the same one every single day. Now, obviously, it gets washed.
Okay.
It gets cleaned. You know, it gets cleaned every day. But, yeah, it's my rehab shirt. And I love when the other guys wear them, too. I see Mune wearing his. Sean Newcomb wears his. I see Grant Taylor and Brian Hudson sometimes wearing them. It's awesome. It's great.
Well, listen, that's good to hear. I'm glad it's getting washed. I think, though, when you're the centerpiece of the shirt, you should have a couple, at least to throw into the rotation. But I'll get on that, Mike. I'll see if I can make something happen here. Talk to me a little bit. So correct me if I'm wrong, but yesterday you had the framed photo, right, of that show up at your locker, right?
So yesterday I show up to the field, and now there is a photo of me. And it weirdly is so real looking. I mean, it's awesome. It's a framed photo of me as a wizard. So now I have that in the apartment with Chase, and home last night, looked at it.
Where did you put it? Because that was a source of contention yesterday when you broke the news to your roommate, Chase Meidroth, that you were going to put it above his bed.
So right now it's just leaning against the window. There will be a day where I collect all of the photos of me as a wizard and everything. And I will decorate Chase's room. I would have loved to put that photo in his bathroom above the toilet. That'd be nice for him. I just like Chase to remember who he lives with and you know, not forget about me when he's playing. So We'll see. Well, I'll think of something about where I'm going to put that one up.
All right. Well, please let us know when you figure out where exactly it's going to go, because we'll want to relay that to all the listeners out there. Well, oh, Mike, yeah. Listen, it's been a pleasure. I cannot wait for September 4th, that Friday night, because it's going to be one of the better giveaways. And listen, it's going to be from everybody I've talked to, Sox fans, they're pretty excited about that one. But it's interesting because the Sox might have had the best giveaway ever with the Pope hat giveaway, you know, a couple weeks ago. So you've got tall timber that you're going to be in the mix with in terms of giveaways.
Oh, no, I know. The Pope hat one was awesome. Literally sold out game, 40,000 Pope hats. So cool. So look, you know, it's hard with the magic wand giveaway to compete with the Pope. but, you know, I'm looking forward to a pretty good turnout that night.
I think it's going to be a pretty good turnout. It's a Friday night. Friday nights have been rocking at the rates this season, and the wand giveaway, no doubt, will probably boost those numbers. It might be a sellout. I wouldn't be shocked if we're routinely seeing crowds close to 40,000 on Friday nights at Rate Field. So the wand bump might actually get us to another sellout. We shall see. And again, it'll be another big game against the Twins, who the White Sox are taking on today in the series finale at Target Field, as the White Sox go for a sweep. They're looking for their fifth win in a row. Don't look now. White Sox, hottest team in the American League, on a W4, which is the longest in the AL going right now. Of course, the Royals have been ridiculously hot. Good thing they put themselves in such a hole that I guess I've started putting them back ever so slightly into the conversation when I'm mentioning the White Sox lead on their division. But they're 11 back. They're still in last place. And part of the reason I've started to put them back into my pregame conversation is because I have for a long time been noting, okay, the Tigers, this is how many games back they are of the White Sox. Well, the Royals have been beating up on the Tigers so much that the Royals have closed the gap to the point where the Tigers feel like they are persona non grata. They're 9 games out right now, and also 9 games under 500 Detroit is. And the Royals now have pulled to within 11. And of course, that's a ridiculous margin to have to make up in just over a month of baseball. So, but nevertheless, it's worth noting that they continue to be really hot. They've won 3 in a row. They had their 9-game winning streak snapped, and then they got right back on that bike, and they're now on a 3-game win streak. So 12 of their last 13 for the Royals. But again, they're 11 back, so White Sox are still in great position over them. 312-332-3776. I'm Jeff Meller. That's the number if you want to jump on and talk some White Sox before we officially start our pregame coverage, which will start at 12:30 this afternoon for the 1:10 first pitch. White Sox and Twins, Jordan Hicks opening for the Southsiders as Zebby Matthews gets the ball for the Twinkies. When we come back, the White Sox have given their top prospect something to work on in AA that will only add to his versatility. If you missed it, I'll catch you up next. This is the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Jeff Meller takes your calls after the game, ESPN Chicago.
Pitch, and Bonnemer swings, and a high deep drive to left field. Way back, and this ball is gone. Well, that's a way to get the 3 runs right back for Birmingham.
Caleb Bonnemer, probably the best White Sox prospect around, although maybe, just maybe, Rock Chalowski will have something to say about that, but that's okay. We'll get to that when the time comes. Chalowski, he's been shut down as he deals with a bit of a wrist issue. Nothing serious, but obviously a lot of excitement surrounding the top pick in this year's MLB draft, but also a lot of excitement surrounding 20-year-old Caleb Bonnemer, who has put together an incredible season this year across 2 levels in the White Sox minor league organization for Kannapolis and Birmingham this year. I'm sorry, Winston-Salem and Birmingham this year. He was in Kannapolis last year. At Winston-Salem, Bonnemer had a 381 on base and an 18 homers as he earned his promotion to Double-A Birmingham. And he has basically just picked up right where he left off in High A. He's added 16 homers and still has a 378 on base. So almost identical numbers to what he did in Winston-Salem in three less games. But what we learned last week is that the White Sox are now giving Caleb Bonnemer an opportunity to patrol center field in Birmingham. He has now made three starts in center as the White Sox look to add a little bit of versatility to their infielder on the left side of the diamond. He has played shortstop and third base quite a bit throughout his minor league career. Now he's adding center field to the mix. Like I said, he's made three starts and, you know, makes you wonder, hey, man, I don't know if that position is going to be any easier to get in if Tristan Peters keeps hitting the way he's hitting. But it's amazing because the White Sox have Colson Montgomery at short, obviously, with the ability to go to third whenever the White Sox need him to. Chase Mydroth, second short, covered. Sam Antonacci has transitioned to left field about as well as I think anybody could have possibly have hoped. And I think he's only going to get better defensively with the more reps he gets in left. But he also, when he has gone to second base this season, Antonacci, that is, he has looked like there's no rust whatsoever. That position is extremely natural for him. We know Antonacci played short in the World Baseball Classic this year. Miguel Vargas has shown the versatility to be able to go from third to first whenever the White Sox ask him to do that, you know, to give Munetaka Murakami the occasional off day or if they slot him in at DH. And so now the White Sox top hitting prospect, Caleb Bonnemer, is going to be somebody who, whether it be, you know, and because it looks like short and third, it's pretty well blocked. But you love the fact that the White Sox are giving him an opportunity to get those reps in center. And it makes you wonder, Caleb Bonnemer, I think next year there's no question. I would imagine if everything goes well, he stays healthy, he will at some point next season make his major league debut in 2027. But you wonder, could the White Sox be even more aggressive with that timeline? If Caleb Bonnemer continues to be productive, I don't know. I'm just asking the question. Is it somebody who the White Sox would consider maybe letting him get a taste at some point in September with the possibility, hey, if he can play, if he can handle it after the minor league season's over, would he be somebody the White Sox could consider for a postseason roster spot? I think it's probably highly unlikely, but the fact that they're getting him reps in center field, I'm not going to rule it out completely. So more good news, more versatility. That is why you continue to draft shortstops. Even when you've got a bunch of shortstops, they can always just move over to a different spot on the diamond and usually handle it pretty well because, as we all know, hopefully you know at this point, shortstop is by far and away the most difficult defensive position to handle on the diamond. And if you can handle that, you can usually figure it out somewhere else, especially if they give you a chance to learn a position in Double and Triple A. 312-332-3776. That's the number. I am Jeff Meller. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark Saturday, September 5th, as the White Sox take on the Twins at 6:10. These very Twins who they're playing at Target Field today as they go for the sweep. First 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a Finance Bro vest presented by Xfinity. Or skip the lines and secure your promo at checkout with guaranteed promo. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. When we come back, want to take a peek around the majors, some of the things going on this week we'll catch you up on, and also want to let you hear from White Sox bench coach Walker McKinvin before we get out of here. Lots to do here on White Sox Weekly. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Cap and Jay Hood, tomorrow morning at 6, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. With tickets starting at just $12, there's fun for the whole family. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. Hanging out with you, pregame show officially begins at 12:30. But if you're new to the program, as I always like to say, White Sox Weekly, it's just extended pregame coverage where we're talking Sox and Major League Baseball with you. And if you want to be part of the show, you want to talk some White Sox with me, 312-332-3776. That's the number to jump aboard here on ESPN Chicago as the White Sox go for a sweep today at Target Field against the Minnesota Twins. Sox now 8.5 up on the Minnesota Twins, and it feels like they can pretty much finish them off today if they do pick up that sweep. They do have another three games left against the Twins, as I just read the promo there for the White Sox coming up next weekend. But it feels like if they pick up a win again today, I don't know how the Twins come back to beat the White Sox. You know, if they'd be 9.5 back at this point, that's a lot of ground to make up this late in the season. So White Sox are in great position today. Jordan Hicks will open for them up against Zebby Matthews. I do always like to go around the majors here on White Sox Weekly just to catch you up on what happened over the week, things I'm keeping an eye on. I do think worth noting, yesterday afternoon at Wrigley Field, Pete Crow Armstrong launched 3 home runs, and I do believe that that was his signature game that, for all intents and purposes, has secured the National League MVP for PCA. Honestly, seems like it's been a two-horse race between Pete Crow Armstrong and Shohei Ohtani for maybe the last month or so since PCA's been on an absolute heater. And we just learned yesterday, I think it was yesterday, maybe Friday night, that Shohei Ohtani is not going to return to the mound today like we originally believed he would earlier in the week. There was word that Ohtani was going to open today's game for the Dodgers as he begins the rehab process. Remember, he has been experiencing knee discomfort, his left knee. And so the Dodgers had shut him down from pitching for a while here. And really, if Ohtani was going to make, I think, one last hurrah and run for another MVP, I truly think he was going to have to get back on the mound. Now, I don't want to dismiss, because I've actually been somebody who has been advocating for what he's actually already done as a pitcher in, you know, giving the Dodgers, I believe it's 85 innings so far this year. Let me pull it up here as I run through it. But just giving, you know, the Dodgers, 85 and two-thirds innings of work for the Dodgers this season in 14 starts. He's 8-2 with a 1.79 ERA and a 0.95 whip. So Ohtani gave the Dodgers about half a season of Cy Young caliber pitching. And so that cannot be in any way understated. And but at the plate, he's been great, but maybe not up to his typical Ohtani standards, what we've kind of learned to expect from him over the last two seasons with the Dodgers when he hit 54 and 55 home runs in his MVP seasons, his first 2 years with the club. He's fallen off a bit. He's only hit 30 home runs so far this season. He is pacing for 36. So obviously that's a far cry from the production at the plate that he has given them the past two seasons. And I think it's with Pete Crow Armstrong's defense in center field being as good as it is, I just think it's kind of PCA's year for the NL MVP. And I think it's one of those inflection point moments where you look at it and in conjunction with a 3-home run day to give the Cubs a win, with Ohtani, with the announcement that he's not returning to the mound, at least for the, you know, short-term future here. He still could return at some point this season for the Dodgers, but it's not likely that he's going to be in any significant amount of time at this point where he could really add much to his season stat line as a pitcher. And so it just feels like with the production that he had yesterday, it is PCA's award to lose at this point. Another thing that caught my eye this week around the majors, I think worth noting, because, I mean, if you're a Sox fan, I know it didn't necessarily end the way maybe people were hoping for, but Chris Sale, I mean, what a third act he has had in his career as a member of the Atlanta Braves. He finally picked up his first Cy Young Award in 2024. He went 18-3 that year, had a 2.38 ERA, and he was just dominant as he's always been. But he continues to just unbelievable. At the age of 37, Chris Sale is really fronting the Braves rotation as they try and secure themselves a bye in the first round of the National League playoffs. Chris Sale outdueled Yoshinobu Yamamoto earlier this week. And the reason it's worth noting is because Chris Sale picked up a shutout. And in this day and age, for a pitcher to pitch, you know, get the complete game, you know, to, in order to log a shutout, you have to pitch the entire game. And Sale did that. And he did so in a 1-0 win against the Dodgers earlier this week, a huge showdown between the Braves and LA, and a big showdown because both teams are kind of chasing that number two seed, and the Braves actually swept the Dodgers, which was big because that now ties them, at least record-wise, in the National League. They're both chasing the Brewers, who are 85-51, but partially because of that sweep the Braves had, now Atlanta and the Dodgers are 81-55. So that one is probably going to come down the stretch here as to who gets that bye that I'm talking about in the American League for the White Sox. Now, the Braves and Dodgers are in a huge race down the stretch for the one in the National League. And Chris Sale, it was wild because the Braves were winning 1-0 in the eighth. And I was watching that game, and it was Thursday, and the White Sox had the day off. And I thought for sure, you know, I've just been conditioned at this point. Anytime a pitcher is over 100 pitches deep into a game, once the inning's over, you feel like, okay, that's probably going to do it for them for the day. And no, Walt Weiss with the Braves trying to, you know, sweep the Dodgers and win that series. They had already won it, but obviously trying to get that sweep. He let Chris Sale go back out for the ninth inning. And there was a weird play, but Sale ended up finishing it off. He goes 9 shutout innings, 11 strikeouts as he improves to 13-9 and has a 2.06 ERA on the season at the age of 37. Anybody who's asking the question, you know, who still at this point is asking the question, Chris Sale, is he a Hall of Famer? I think unquestionably, yes, he is. I think he has answered every question at this point. And, you know, ultimately, I don't know if he'll get to 200 wins because, again, that's a stat that's hard for pitchers to accumulate these days. They're not allowed to go deep in games like they used to. But Chris Sale still has 158 wins right now in his career. So that's pretty solid. He's got a winning percentage of .620. He's 158-97 throughout his career. But the dominance, right? He has 2,756 strikeouts in 2,228 innings. He's got more than 500. He's got 500 strikeouts more than more strikeouts than innings pitched in his career. And he seems to be he seems to be aging like a fine wine as he, at 37 years old, latest outing, shuts out the Dodgers. Incredible. Fun to watch him. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly as we just took a look around the major leagues. We'll get back to some Sox talk. If you missed last week's Sunday Spotlight, it was a great one with Jake Rogers, who joined Len Casper. Jake Rogers, of course, recently added by the White Sox, and he has done a nice job of really fitting right in. Of course, the Joey Bart injury created some opportunity for the White Sox at the major league level, and Jake Rogers has stepped right in. He had that big ABS challenge overturned for a strikeout for Sean Newcomb yesterday. Of course, he had his first career walk-off home run against the Tigers a little over a week ago. So if you missed that conversation, we'll play a little bit of that for you when we come back. This is the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Hear Lennon DJ and High Def on 100.3 HD2.
The 0-1. Rogers with a high fly ball out in the left center. Robert back. It is gone! He's won it! That is a two-run homer! Jake Rogers!
Now let's celebrate! Let's jump up and down! I love it!
He's going to be mobbed, and hopefully this team, man, oh, man.
This team indeed. That was Friday night, August 22nd, when Jake Rogers hit a walk-off home run at Wright Field to help the White Sox rally past the Mets 6-4. That night, that was the 10th walk-off win of the season. Tristan Peters, of course, gave us the 11th walk-off win with a home run against the Mets, the second consecutive game during his streak when he homered, which we will relive for you in the 12 o'clock hour if you missed it earlier. But Jake Rogers, he was the focus of Len Casper's Sunday Spotlight last week. Len, of course, takes a look at somebody inside the world of baseball each and every Sunday. Always a fantastic interview. And so if you missed that during our pregame show, wanted to run that back for you because it was such a timely guest for the week, and obviously that was prior to White Sox Weekly last week, so wanted to play that for you. Jake Rogers talking about what it felt like, what the moment was like, his first career walk-off home run with Len Casper.
Yeah, wow. Still don't know what to say. It was just such a crazy game, you know, obviously with the back-to-back-to-back homers, and, you know, just it was an incredible game to be a part of, and yeah, just to have that moment is really meaningful in my career, and to have it in such a cool game is really awesome.
You've not been here that long, but there have been some games like that. Unfortunately, the loss to the Cubs the other day, but that one was back and forth. And when you were a Red Sox, you played in one of the craziest games I've ever seen against the White Sox. What is it like being involved in games like that?
It's fun. I mean, it's fun. It's stressful for the catcher, you know, to try to call some pitches and make the right ones. But, you know, it's super fun, you know, just this game is so much fun. I have a lot of fun playing it. And yeah, just to be a part of these crazy games, you know, it makes you feel like, yeah, you just makes you feel like you earn it when you win. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun to be a part of these games. Obviously, you'd like to win by like eight every day, but it's not how baseball goes. So it's definitely a lot of fun to be a part of.
Are you familiar with Sporkle?
I am. Yeah, I am.
All right. So if we did Sporkle and just basically said, you know, 130 teammates in the last month, how many of them could you name?
Oh, man.
Obviously, the Tigers, you'd be pretty good.
Depends on the time limit. I could probably hammer them down to getting them to most of them, but it would take me a long time to go through each team.
Yeah. Just behind the scenes and the travel and all of that stuff. I mean, what's been the kind of the weirdest part of all of that?
Man, it's been kind of nuts, you know, not knowing if after you've been DFA'd, if it's going to take, you know, before the deadline, if you're going to be traded the next day, or if it's going to take a week, or if you're going to clear. So I think just after Detroit, I got DFA'd, I went home, and my offseason home is in Dallas. So I flew from Detroit to Dallas and was there for 2 or 3 days, and then got traded to the Orioles. Went to the Orioles on an off day, played 3 games there, and then got traded to Boston, so flew Baltimore to Boston, and then I was there for about a week, got DFA'd while the team was in Toronto, so I flew from Toronto to Dallas, was there for 1 day, got picked up by the White Sox here, and then flew to Detroit, to Dallas to Detroit to play the Tigers, so it was definitely a lot of travel, bouncing back and forth there for 3 weeks, got a lot of flights in.
Yeah, you're smart, you know the deal, you get dealt with Adley, so he's on the IL. So when he comes off, you probably go, okay, there could be some roster machinations here. Was that the one where you kind of thought, okay, I might end up actually somewhere else at some point?
Yeah, crazy thing is, I had a chance to be traded, you know, in Detroit, and I knew that there was a big chance that that could happen, and come to find out that the Orioles were trying to trade for me before the Tigers DFA'd me. And so, yeah, I knew once I got to Baltimore, I was like, okay, this is the spot, and, you know, I'm going to kind of get comfortable and learn everybody here. And then all of a sudden, you know, Elias and Breslow kind of made a deal where they sent me to Boston. And I knew, you know, obviously, like you said, Adley being on the IL, you know, as a veteran guy, you kind of figure out what move you would make when Adley comes back. And obviously it was between me and two guys, and Connor Wong being, you know, there and being comfortable and knowing their staff, I figured it was probably going to be me. So yeah, once I got to Boston, I was like, okay, they're probably going to make a move after a week or two. And, you know, when he comes back, and, you know, after that, getting DFA'd there, you know, just hoping another team take a chance on you. And, you know, I knew the White Sox were trying for a little bit there at the deadline. So I knew that was, you know, a good chance to be here. And obviously they took a chance on me. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to think that you ended up in the best place after all was said and done. Last question. What about this place that you've played against them so much has really stood out to you since you've been here?
You know, from afar, you know, the team that plays hard, and they got a lot of pesky hitters that are very hard to get out. And they have, you know, four or five guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark at any time. So, you know, obviously seeing Mike from the other side of this, with his hat and the wand, you know, it's just like, you know, they have fun over here. And, you know, just playing this game, I try to have as much fun as possible. And this team is, you know, I think embodies that. And, you know, this team is really good and wins a lot of close games. And yeah, I think this team is just a lot of fun to be a part of. Seeing them from afar, it's really cool to be a part of it now and have a little fun with them.
Yeah.
There you go. Jake Rogers, as he joined Len Casper last Sunday as the feature in our Sunday Spotlight. Len, another fantastic guest coming your way during our pregame show. Dan Gladden, the radio voice of the Minnesota Twins, who was a participant in one of the most epic World Series ever, the 1991 World Series against the Atlanta Braves. He's going to be the featured guest in today's Sunday Spotlight. So, of course, stay tuned as we will get you going with our pregame show officially beginning at 12:30 today. Reminder that Jordan Hicks will be opening for the Sox today up against Zebby Matthews. Expect Jose Urquidy to handle the bulk role for the White Sox in terms of innings today. Sox fans, join us at the ballpark for Childhood Cancer Awareness Day on Sunday, September 6th, as the White Sox take on the Twins. 5:20 start time, folks. That is Sunday night baseball next week when the White Sox are at home against Wrigley Field. First 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a kid-designed hat presented by CIBC. To purchase tickets and prepaid parking, visit whitesox.com/promos. We are going to let you hear from White Sox bench coach Walker McKinven when we come back. Before we take a quick timeout, though, let's pause 10 seconds for stations to identify themselves.
This is ESPN Chicago, home of the White Sox. WMVP WTBC HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Sports radio station.
All right, White Sox bench coach Walker McKinven when we return. This is the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Stream the games live on the ESPN Chicago app.
Jeff Meller back here with you on White Sox Weekly as we get set for the series finale between the White Sox and Twins today. White Sox going for a sweep after claiming the series by taking the first two games of this series on Friday night and Saturday afternoon. And today they will look to sweep the Twins as they leave Target Field today and then head off to Houston to take on the Astros for a four-game series on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week before they return home to Wrigley Field to take on these very same Minnesota Twins next weekend. Sox fans, pre-gaming made easy. Treat your group to a patio party. 2 hours of all-you-can-eat plus unlimited beer, wine, and Coca-Cola products. For more information, visit whitesox.com/partyareas or call 312-674-1366. 1,000. White Sox bench coach Walker McKinven met the media earlier this week and had a lot of interesting things to say about the White Sox approach this year, how they've been able to be so successful, and this is what it sounded like.
You and Will's been on the job for 2 years. You've been with him for 2 years. Kind of how have you seen him change, and how has the staff changed right at the time, if it has for that matter? I mean, because he had a pretty good idea coming in, it seemed like.
He obviously entered this situation a year and a half ago, and you know, just trying to, you know, him to a bigger extent, but both of us trying to, you know, wrap our arms around the situations and, you know, figure out what the problems are, what the strengths are, and, you know, highlight the strengths and try to minimize the problems or address the problems. And, you know, it's been a process the entire time. We continue to be on the process, you know, despite, you know, having more wins this year than last year, still view it as very process oriented and still have problems that we're addressing on a daily basis. But, you know, that's how we do want to attack it, you know, from a process standpoint. And, you know, we continue to do so and like the way that it's been going. Yeah.
You talk to players who used to play for him, which I have a couple this week, and they said that Will is very even keel and still has a lot of confidence. Is that what you see?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, unbelievable human being to just like spend every single day with, right? So that's that makes it fun, and that makes it easy to, you know, promote a good working environment for not only me but everyone here, players, coaches, support staff. And so yeah, Will's energy and Will's demeanor just kind of like trickles out to the entire organization, really. And yeah, perfect guy to do this with. Yeah.
What have you come to appreciate about his communication style? It seems like both of you kind of prioritize being direct, maybe in different ways, but you know, he seems like he tries to handle things straightforward.
Yeah, no, Will is very direct, tries to make sure that we get the most important message across, and you know, trust that the other things follow, but make sure that we nail the big things like we've said before. And you know, we stuck to that, right? Like, Will is, you know, simple, direct, leads with kindness, as he's mentioned, and people respond to that, and you know, feel good about, you know, receptiveness towards that approach. Yeah.
You're entering a phase of the season where everything is mattering even more. Postseason could be happening. What do you have to do differently, or do you do anything differently at this point?
No, absolutely not. Trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel here just because there's, you know, 30 something games left and we're in a, you know, a desirable position. We you know, like I mentioned earlier, process oriented, take it day by day, to throw out a cliche, but like that's absolutely right. Like we are treating each game on its own, you know, small eye on the week ahead with those things and planning things out. But we're trying to win today, win tonight, every single day, with what we have available to us, and we're going to keep doing that through the next month and a half until hopefully we're playing more games, right?
I know it's early, but once Kyle Teal, he's working his way back, just kind of what is the outlook on the catching situation, and now that you kind of could have three?
You know, as far as the outlook, when he returns here, yeah, Kyle's going to play, right? Like, Kyle's important to this team, on both sides of the baseball, and you know, we'll ease him back, understanding how his season has gone from you know, an injury standpoint and all those things. So we'll, you know, hopefully view that as a strength for us in the coming month and a half. And but Kyle's important. Kyle's going to play, and we're excited for that to happen here in the hopefully near term. Yeah.
When you have a day like today where you choose to go with an opener, what goes into identifying which pitcher is the right guy for that spot?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, availability. But yeah, it's, it, you know, when you decide to do that, you get to pick, you know, who's pitching in an important moment of the game, which is the first inning, and typically against the team's best hitters. We trust a large handful of guys. As you've seen, we've opened with a handful of different players, but availability really drives the bus, and then some flexibility things after that, right? Like we can decide to, you know, we have to take into account how long we want them to pitch, or how short we want them to pitch, right? And then go from there and and then we get to choose who pitches next and where they start and what hitters they face more. So all those things are in the conversations to decide if we're going to use an opener and who we're going to use to open. Yeah.
Walker, what's your perspective on the logistics of carrying three catchers if and when you guys try and do it?
Yeah, there's certainly some benefits towards it. It depends on the profiles of the three catchers, right? Obviously handedness, their availability to play, offensive, defensive, or just, so all those things. I mean, there is some advantage to it if that's something you want to go to. Certainly if rosters expand, like that gives you an extra spot to consider something like that. It's a little bit harder with the 13 position players, in my opinion. That's why you don't see teams doing it that often. There are some benefits to it. But you're taking something away also, right? Like you're deciding to take something away if you're using a spot on a third catcher that, likely doesn't play that much, right? So all those things go into the calculus. But if it's if it's the best fit for a specific team, it works. Teams do this in September, and so yeah.
What's impressed you the most about Monet over the course of this season?
I think he's like noticed early on that like it's well documented media-wise and narrative-wise that like Mooney's kind of like changed the culture around here, changed the vibes around here, right? And that's real. He's he's part of like this turnaround and making the group believe and buy in and just turning us into where we are today, right? He's a huge part of that, and so just the energy that takes from him, right? He's got media following him. Everywhere he goes, people are screaming at him outside the hotels and all those things. And he's, we highlighted in hitters meetings all the time and just always on, right? So like just the ability to withstand that and still give energy and in a positive way and like wear that burden all year long and not skip a beat. I think it's impressive. Like we were worried, like this guy's gonna get spread thin just because of, how much this whole thing is, right? For the first time, and he's still doing it, and he's the same dude every day, and performing, and it's been awesome.
In Jake's case, him having played in Detroit for a while, he's coming with some familiarity with you guys. He's faced. He's gone up against your pitching staff. Has he brought with him any kind of insights into the pitchers, having seen them from the other perspective?
Yeah. He's given his perspective on a lot of these guys that Detroit knows well, right, from just being an opponent. So yeah, he's added his two cents in. Credit to Jake. Jake had a tough three weeks there of being on four different teams, but he was excited to join us, fits in seamlessly with this group, fun guy to be around, and he's been great so far. Yeah.
What do you think unique about him, just like catching wise, that you've seen that makes him stand out?
He catches a little bit in a different way. If you're paying attention to that stuff, he makes he does a few things physically different, but been an elite defensive catcher in this league, in years past, and we're working to. Get him to that level to help us in that way too. So excited to have him. He's good guy to have on board.
Yeah. What are those physical things that are different?
He just does the catcher position a little bit differently. If you like, not to get into like catcher mechanic stuff, but that was more an aside. But yeah, he makes really large moves on the baseball, really fast large moves, distinct moves. Loads the baseball a little bit differently than most catchers do. So I've always admired him from the side. Just I pay attention to the catching position, and I've always admired the way he does it. And was happy to talk to him and like talking to him about how to play defense and what goes into his thought process when he's catching to make a move like that he does. Yeah.
I know players and some people have just talked about the ABS system and how they're just kind of learning as the season goes on. Just what do you make of just how the guys have handled ABS lately, and then what are some things you guys are really focusing on?
Overall, on the large scope of how we continue to do it, we're happy with where we're at in it. We're an aggressive team with it. We're churning out value with it. Our catchers have gotten really good at it, notably Drew Romo. going off on that, understanding the strike zone and good times to challenge, all things that we're really happy with. And yeah, we're finding out just that, like, some players are more inclined to challenge, some are less inclined to challenge, some are good at understanding the strike zone, some are not as good at understanding the strike zone. So we're just gaining information on all that stuff. But overall, like, our overarching strategy on it, that we're going to be aggressive and you know, try to get as much value out of a new tool that we possibly can.
You mentioned Drew's been really good at it lately. Is that just, and talk about how he's adjusting in game, is that what makes him so valuable, just his ability just to process as the game goes on?
Absolutely, yeah. Just one of the many things Drew does well at the catching position, but he's gotten slowly ascended into, like, being really, really good at it. And that's from, you know, his game awareness. He's willing to take feedback. He's willing to, you know, follow a plan. And this is just one of those things. He works really hard, and he's gotten really, really good at that too. And we're seeing, you know, the fruits of that.
Miguel Vargas last year made some real strides and had some good stretches, but at the end of the year, maybe the stat line didn't reflect the year he had. This year, he seems like he's reached a real consistent point. In particular, last night, 1-for-1, but 4 walks and in some 0-2 counts to where he draws these. What have you seen from him that where he's able to achieve this consistency?
So Miggy's always had this unbelievably stable, like, offensive base, right? He makes excellent swing decisions. He's an above-average contact guy, and you know, the damage was sporadic, but you saw the high ends of that, and you saw, like, real power in there. And, you know, this year, I mean, it's pretty, like, if you're just trying to diagnose it simply, he's moving the bat faster, he swings the bat harder, and he's maintained swing decisions and his contact ability. And so all those things, like, his entire offensive game has gotten better. He's gotten his body in a really good position. He's gotten his swing mechanically in a really good position to move the bat faster, while maintaining the things he already did well. And that's just a player developing. That's a player getting better. And now you're seeing the bottom line stats reflect that, right? He's gotten better defensively too, so we're happy with that too. So Miggy's been unbelievable, a key cog in this wheel, and yeah, we're thrilled with Miggy. Yeah.
It's a similar way, like, how is this year the progress that Mydroth has made maybe shown some of the upside he had that maybe the public wasn't aware of, you know, coming into this season?
Yeah, and Chase has been taking a step forward as well, right? He's been doing great defensively, maintaining his swing decisions, maintaining his, you know, contact, sold a little bit of contact for a little bit of power, but really, really good baseball player that, you know, has a year on record in this league and has started to figure out what this league is all about, and got his body in a good position to withstand 162, and we're seeing that he's grown up in this league, and he's a force to be reckoned with. And yeah, Chase has been unbelievable.
We've talked to a lot of these players just experiencing this part of the season for the first time, the physical and the mental tax. But for you guys, as you're gearing up for the postseason as a coaching staff, what is the challenging part of just this part of the regular season?
We're trying to, you know, keep this on a day-to-day thing and attack each day separately while keeping an eye on the future, I suppose, as a coaching staff. But we're trying to keep these guys going and you know, keep attention focused on the right things, which is the day at hand, which is the, you know, the things that we think each player can get better at, communicating those clearly, simply, like we said, and attacking those things in the way we have been attacking them. So inevitably in August, there's, you know, people are tired mentally, tired physically, but we're just trying to keep our foot on the gas, give guy appropriate rest when needed, but keep our foot on the gas and attack those things on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we'll keep our head underwater and look up where we're at, right, in a month and a half from now. So, yeah.
Again, that was White Sox bench coach Walker McKinven earlier in the week, addressing plenty of issues there. White Sox go for the sweep this afternoon in Minneapolis at Target Field. White Sox, Twins, 1:10 first pitch. Jordan Hicks will open for the Sox today. Jose Urquidy expected to handle the bulk hitting role. And then Zebby Matthews will be on the mound for the Twins today. Byron Buxton officially placed on the injured list prior to today's game. So I noted how he was not in the starting lineup yet again earlier this morning, and now we officially know that he will not be available off the bench as well. Of course, I'm making note of this because Byron Buxton has been the most notorious Sox killer, active Sox killer, this side of Josh Naylor. And so the fact that he is not going to partake in this series, certainly not going to lose sleep over that. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, what a week for Tristan Peters. We'll relive it with you right here on the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
You're really living up to the nickname Banana Bonds. Are you embracing that now that you're really tapping into your power?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the banana part, obviously, I swung a banana bat the other day. I'm proud of that. And so, yeah, I'm going to embrace it.
The pitch to Tristan Peters. And he hits it in the air out in the deep right field. And it is a home run. It hit the glove of Benj, and he banged into the wall. And the momentum took the ball into the bullpen.
Well, that's useful. That was perfect. What an effort, though, by Benjamin Wright. He went straight back and hard, reached up, and had the ball until he collided with the fence. And the ball came trickling out of his glove and over the top of the fence for the home run.
3-1 home. Swing and a fly ball, center field, it's deep. Back on it is Ewing. It is gone! The ball game is over! Tristan Peters with the latest walk-off homer.
Unbelievable. Not again.
Tristan Peters is hit high in the air to right. Nemo at the fence will watch it go. 3 days, three homers for Peters. A two-run shot, and it's 3-2 in the second. Oh, is crunched in the air, deep to right. It is gone. He's got a four-game home run streak. Wow, 11-7.
When you are hot, why would you ever think about doing anything but trying to hit the ball over the fence? And he has that swing working, and he's having a perfect night.
Let me hear you say the A is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. This show is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Again, this is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S. This show is bananas, B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
Today's Twitter poll, Miguel Vargas said there would need to be a meeting to decide if Tristan Peters would be allowed in the, quote, big bat club. I'm a team. Mune, Colson, Miguel. The question is, after homering in four straight games, should Tristan Peters be let in the Big Bat Club? No.
I'm a big Peters fan, but I know. He's not quite at that level, in my opinion.
Haters, 56% say yes, he should be. 44% say not yet.
And that means Chase has to be in it because he has one more home run.
Right. I think you've got to be a 25-plus guy and maybe even multiple seasons before you get into it.
The big bat,
boy club.
Yeah, the big bat club. Tristan has done special things when it comes to the home runs. And in four straight games, for me, yeah, he's the big bat guy for four straight games. But
he's got 11 on the year, which is awesome. Peters is not a home run hitter. He will hit home run.
Yeah, and Chase is the same way, right? He has home run pop, but he's not a home run hitter.
Here is the big bopper, Tristan Peters.
The 0-1.
Hit in the air, out into right. It's way back there. It is gone. He's tied the club record
He has homered in five straight games. Tristan Peters makes it 6-2.
He's in the big boy club now. I don't care.
Incredible.
Put him on the list, boys. Varkey, yes, let him in.
What a capper for Tristan Peters as we were talking about it at Rate Field earlier this week. It's like he heard folks doubting whether or not he belonged in the Big Bat Club, and he put us all on notice, homering for a fifth consecutive game, tying the White Sox franchise record. It's been unbelievable. And by the way, Tristan Peters, the only player in Major League history to hit for the cycle, a grand slam, a walk-off home run, record six RBIs, reach base safely five times in a game, and homer in five straight games. That is per stats. Again, the only White Sox player to ever do that. Hey, Sox fans, be at Rate Field on Friday, September 18th, as the White Sox take on the Tigers at 6:40, and then stick around after the game for a post-game concert featuring Cole Swindell, presented by Xfinity. Exclusive on-field passes are on sale now with limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/concert. That, folks, is going to wrap up this edition of White Sox Weekly, but don't go anywhere because, obviously, we are sticking around and we will get you set with our pregame coverage, which officially begins at 12:30. First pitch at 1:10 as the White Sox look to sweep the Twins in Minneapolis at Target Field today. I'm Jeff Meller. Thanks to Aiden O'Connor and Brendan Riley for producing. We will talk to you in a couple minutes. This is the ESPN Chicago Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.